Omicron. I hope you had a great holiday, because getting back to normal is turning out to be a Twitch show. Travel plans have been upended, schools are shutting down, and hospitals are filling up faster than you can say Happy New Year. Now that everyone has toasted the holidays together and crowded onto packed airplanes together, the logical thing to do would be to get tested to make sure that you don't bring home any nasty bugs to your friends and your schoolmates and your coworkers. But good luck finding one of those half billion COVID tests that the president promised us. Most of the big chain pharmacies like Walgreens and CVS, etc., have plastered these things, little homemade Sharpie signs on the front door saying, nothing to see here, no COVID test kits here, move along. So, online, if you luck out and you get an order placed for a home test, go ahead and check your shipping date, because it is likely still a few weeks away. And even if you win the lottery and you find a test, good luck interpreting exactly what you're supposed to do with the results. Also, fake tests. They're creeping their way into the marketplace. And it turns out the real tests each have different instructions, slightly different. But if you screw them up, you screw up your result. On top of that, the CDC has now changed its protocols for quarantine times. It's down to 5 days instead of 10 days. But if you've beaten COVID, you're likely to continue testing positive, possibly even for weeks. Since Christmas Day, more than 1,800 flights have been canceled, and much of that is due to crew members who are either sick or they can't find tests. I want you to do me a favor. Check out this, check out my Instagram post from last night. These are the gates at Fort Myers International Airport. They are jammed with canceled and delayed families, many of them lying on the floor. They're just trying to return home. Oh, yeah. Pilots across the country are now being offered triple time pay just to take some extra shifts. There is a little good news here. The CDC now says that kids 12 and older are eligible for the booster vaccine. But where the heck are we as a nation? And why, after almost 2 years into this pandemic, is it such a colossal mess? Here are all the promises that President Biden made in just the last few months leading up to the holidays.
We're committing $2 billion to purchase nearly 300 million rapid tests for distribution to community health centers, food banks, schools, so that every American, no matter their income, can access free and convenient tests.
The bottom line, this winter, you'll be able to test for free in the comfort of your home and have some peace of mind.
We're now able to purchase 500 million at-home rapid tests to be sent to the American people for free when they request it. And we're going to continue to use the Defense Production Act to produce as many tests as possible.
Oh, peace of mind. Readily available tests. Are you kidding me? Welcome to COVID 2022. Joining us now, News Nation correspondent Brian Enten, who has been busy all day talking to local business owners down in South Florida about the toll that this is taking on them as well. Brian, I just showed the viewers what's going on in the airports. All these people across the country sandwiched not only on planes, but in packed terminals, and then, you know, flying, you know, cheek to jowl, having just visited and smooched everybody on New Year's. And the business owners across the country are the fallout as well. Walk me through what you're hearing from the people down there.
Yeah, so Ashley, the airlines and the flight delays, they are bad and they really get all the attention. And you mentioned it. One of the biggest reasons is because the pilots and the flight attendants are calling out sick because they are testing positive for COVID or they have symptoms of COVID. So you turn on the news and you hear about the airline cancellations. But it is happening to businesses throughout the entire country, and not just businesses. NYPD, 7,000 officers called in sick last week alone. Schools starting again today, Broward County, Florida, just north of where we are, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. They started school today. 1,600 teachers called out sick on the very first day of school after Christmas break. And you can just imagine what's happening to the small businesses like this small family supermarket behind me in Miami. They're getting 5 or 6 people calling out every single day. When that's half your staff, it's hard to even keep the doors open, Ashley.
So, Brian, I was actually down in Florida with my mom over Christmas, and I went out to a couple of restaurants. Most of them I wanted to sit outside, and I saw all these open tables, and then the maitre d' would say, a 40-minute wait. And I said, that sounds dumb. I see a whole bunch of open tables. And they said, they only have 40% of the staff. And that was repeated over and over again, restaurant after restaurant. A, they can't get people to work, which is maddening. B, these people are calling in sick day of, sometimes not even calling in. Is that what you're seeing pretty much everywhere you are as well?
Absolutely. We went to several different businesses today, and almost every small business owner had the same story. Look, they say we were already in such a tough position going into Omicron with the supply chain shortage and the workforce shortage. This supermarket behind me alone has a ton of openings. They can't even hire a dishwasher, and he's offering to pay $15 an hour. So they were in that situation. Now come all of the sick calls, and they don't know what to do. As I said, it is hard to keep the doors open.
So when you interviewed these business owners, were they sort of, sanguine about it? Like, okay, well, it's a pandemic. Or were they angry?
They're angry, and you have to understand because, like, again, we talk about the big businesses all the time, the Best Buys and the Target and the American Airlines. But think about these smaller business owners that, you know, if they have 10 employees and 5 call out, it's a massive problem. We talked to a guy today who owns a landscaping business and also a chemical testing company. He owns both businesses here in South Florida. He has a lot of employees, about 1,000, but a lot have been calling out. And he says there are also some who are actually taking advantage of all of this and just trying to get time off of work right now. Listen to what he told me about that.
One person tried to tell HR that they had COVID, and they sent in a copy of a report. And when HR zoomed into the report through the text message, it actually wasn't even that same person. It was someone else's results. I tried to make intelligent decisions and say, okay, do you have a fever? No. Do you have a loss of taste or smell? No. Then come to work. Wear a mask and come to work.
And you know, Ashley, he sounds tough there, but you have to understand a lot of these people are just trying to keep their businesses open right now.
I get it. I mean, and I also can see how there would be a lot of people taking advantage of this opportunity to have a couple of extra PTOs, paid time off days, lucked onto their Christmas vacation. But then there are also those people, Brian, who couldn't get a flight because there were 1,800 of them or 18,000 canceled since Christmas Day. So I get that, too. Just quickly, can you just zip up the East Coast? Obviously not physically, but tell me about the New York MTA, because there's word that commuter city that relies on, mass transit also taking a big hit.
Yeah, that is a mess, Ashley. I mentioned NYPD, that the officers have been calling out sick. Same thing is happening for the people who work mass transit in New York City. They didn't give specific numbers today, but a ton of the trains were canceled. People were extremely frustrated, and they say they expect major, major delays and cancellations tomorrow, too.
Just wait for the snow. That just complicates everything, as it has in Chicago and Washington, D.C. It's been a total disaster. All right, Brian Anton, I'm glad that you're in shirt sleeves because it's beautiful weather down there, and I will continue to hope for great weather throughout the new year. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Ashley.
Okay, so when he was president-elect in 2020, Joe Biden tore into his predecessor, Donald Trump, saying, quote, after 10 months of the pandemic, we still don't have enough testing. That's a travesty. Okay, that was a quote. So I want to bring in News Nation's Washington correspondent Kelly Meyer, who's in the great indoors because of the storm in D.C. But that kind of quote is the kind of quote, Kelly, where you wish there weren't tape, because we all saw it, we all heard it, we replayed it, and it's embarrassing because he's in a worse boat now. How's that playing now in Peoria?
Well, what the president continues to say is what's different now is the vaccine. So he continues to tout his administration's ability to get shots in arms, meeting his 100 million shots goal in the first 58 days of his presidency. But we remember another goal, the president wanting to declare independence from the virus by the 4th of July, Biden promising to shut down the virus. And now with new variants like Delta and Omicron, Biden is being faced with this harsh reality of this pandemic going into the second year of his administration.
So I'm going to show you something on camera. I don't know if you've got a Zoom screen where you can see what I'm holding up, and I'll ask my director to show this. This is what I call, Kelly, gold, because I tried for 3 weeks to get one of these little babies. This is a double kit of two tests. I got it about 40 minutes ago. I still have a whole bunch of them on order. They're not coming till January 19th. Thanks. That'll help. But this is the problem that everyone's talking about. It doesn't matter if you're in Georgia or Florida, or I'm in Connecticut, or my friends who are in Illinois right now in the broadcast booth of this show having the exact same problem. Can't find tests, can't get an appointment to get a test. I can only get the $200 appointment. That's completely unfair. And then all those people who've been waiting for flights and are delayed, their 72 hours run out. So it's been a real debacle. And when the New York Times starts jumping all over the president, you know it's got to be bad. The New York Post, I get it. They ripped into him real bad about all the promises. But I'm assuming that the Republicans are having a field day with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, we have the libraries here in D.C. giving out testing, but it's a limit of two. And when you go to CVS or Walgreens, if they have them, you know, it's $10 a pop. And that's also a limit of two when people are going in and really just need these, especially over the holidays. Dr. Fauci saying on News Nation that, you know, this will be into the first few weeks of January before you see those 500 million tests that they're promising going out. And then they're saying there'll be more in the months going ahead. But like you said, the point is people need these now. People needed them over the holidays. Biden criticized former President Trump for his claims that every American who wanted to test could get one, calling it a lie. And now we're seeing lines and a shortage of tests in the Biden administration. So President Biden is admitting he wishes he thought of ordering tests months ago, but some governors took matters into their own hands and ordered tests ahead of time and without the president's help here.
So I kind of feel like we got bait and switch. And listen, I'm not trying to be political when I state what I'm about to state, but it is impossible not to say this and get angry. December 27th, that's just a couple days ago, Biden promised to get 500 million, that's a half billion tests into the hands of Americans starting this month. But I think maybe there was some word salad going on, because starting this month meant maybe it could take till March to get them. But that is not helpful after Christmas and holiday celebrations when everybody needs them. They need them now. They need to find out if they're okay to go back to work or back to school or just hang out with their kids. And this is the problem. By the time we get those tests, we may be into a new variant by that point. Like, we may have really suffered the way Brian Enten was reporting in Florida. Nobody can go to work. Nobody can fly a plane. Nobody can serve the peanuts on the plane. This is really stressful. And like I said, I can't imagine that even if you don't want to be political, you can't have a field day with this debacle. I think, what is it? Jen Psaki said the contracts hadn't been finalized yet. Are you kidding me? The test makers say they can't get them done till March.
Yeah, and the same thing for Brian's story there. You know, the CDC saying, you know, you don't have to test if you're not feeling those symptoms, come back to work. And now they're looking at that again. Because they just don't have the tests available for everybody right now. And I think the White House is realizing some of the failures they're meeting here. President Biden admitting that he should have done more sooner, but now it's really too late and they're trying to make up for lost time. And even as he gave that address earlier in December saying they were going to get 500 million tests, they kind of left out when, as he gave that address. And as you mentioned off the top of your show, it wasn't until when we as reporters went through the details and the guidance of, okay, this actually says January. And when in January? As you mentioned, we are now on the 3rd of January. So when are people going to see these tests? And will it be too late for many who need them right now?
Yeah, I was super mad when I went on the interwebs and ordered my tests. They were $17 a pop. And I thought, wait, I could have sworn I heard the president just a few weeks ago saying he was going to reduce those costs, you know, significantly, almost to a quarter of the price. I'm being very wide with my numbers here, but not $17 each. So I got a family of four. That starts to get really expensive, especially if you want to do a couple of tests, because you can never be certain with the first at-home kit. All right, so I'm gonna keep touching base with you on this one, Kelly, to see how things are changing in Washington and how much more politicized it can be. Because just with the facts alone, it's enough for, you know, what I call the, what I say off the top, I said something like it's called the Twitch show, as opposed to something that rhymes with Twitch show. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you so much.
And also, Happy New Year to you. I'm glad that you're safe inside. Okay. So as I mentioned before, the FDA has now expanded the eligibility for the Pfizer booster for your kids, if they're over 12, not under. Got to wait for that one. Joining us now is infectious disease expert Dr. Amish Adalja. Also with me is Dr. Anne Remoyne. She's a professor of epidemiology at UCLA. Okay, to you two doctors, thank you so much for taking the time this late at night. I have some important questions. How successful have we been so far with parents getting their children into the, you know, the shot factory? Because when you're talking about going as low as 12, I feel like some parents start to get even more nervous than they might have been before. So, Dr. Adalja, I'll get you to start off. Where do we stand with hesitancy and little kids?
What we know is that the younger the child is, the less likely they are to be vaccinated. This is one of the segments of the population where vaccine uptake is the lowest. And that's not surprising because we know that parents worry about their children. But these are safe and effective vaccines. It's just that we've got so much vaccine hesitancy, so much misinformation out there. And it does tend to be the case that children are spared from severe disease. So that's created a lot of hesitancy among parents. And it is something we need to overcome as we try to prioritize in-person schooling. But it's going to take some time. Because we've got a major problem with people not wanting to take advantage of this great vaccine that saves lives and removes COVID as a threat to a person's life.
So, Dr. Remoyne, what would you say to parents tonight who are just hearing this maybe for the first time, that their 12-year-old can get the booster? If you wanted to be completely honest and you would have to tell them everything, they're in your office and they're your patient, would you give them the pros and cons, or would you just say, run, don't go and do it?
Well, thanks for having me. And to be clear, I'm an epidemiologist, so I'd be dealing with the data. I wouldn't be dealing with patients. Dr. Adalja would be dealing with patients. So in terms of the data, what I can say is that, you know, we're seeing pediatric hospitalizations increase, and they're increasing rapidly. We have a very contagious variant that is spreading quickly. Children are at risk, and I would say that the benefit of getting this vaccine and benefit of getting this booster to be able to keep kids in school, to be able to keep them safe, to be able to keep them healthy, far outweighs the risk. We know that not only will this vaccine prevent people from the long effects of COVID, from severe disease, hospitalization, and death, it does reduce the risk of getting this virus. So if you want to be able to keep your kid in school, the best way to do it is to get them vaccinated.
Okay, so next question is that the reliability of tests. If you are coming back from your visits to the grandparents or your parties or whatever it is you did over the holidays, I showed this earlier that I got my hands on one of these test kits. There's only two, my family's four, so, you know, only two of us will get it. But how reliable really are they, Dr. Adalja? Because I keep reading 85%, but you better not mess up on the arcane details with each home test, because they're all a little different, and you have a little slip up and the devil's in those details.
It all depends upon what question you're trying to answer with the test. So when you talk about these rapid antigen tests, what they're really good at is telling you if you have enough virus in your nose or in your mouth to infect somebody else, if you're a danger to other people. So in that sense, screening of asymptomatic individuals, especially if you do it more than once, maybe over a 48-hour period, you do two tests, it's very accurate at telling you you're safe to be around. But if you're sick, if you've got symptoms and the test is positive, that's helpful. But if it's negative, you can't stop there. You've got to figure out what what am I sick with? It's a different question you're asking. So there you might need to do more formal testing. You might need to be checked for other viruses like influenza or even bacterial infections like group A strep, which causes strep throat. So it's important to just put the test in context of what you're trying to accomplish with it. And I think for the most part, when people are just screening themselves, these rapid antigen tests work really great at determining whether you're a danger to others, whether you're contagious.
Okay, and then I'm just going to follow that up as well. If you can continue on this vein, that the fake tests, how is the average consumer who doesn't have degrees like you do, how are we supposed to determine what's real and what's fake? Because this is now another burgeoning market for awful people to try to scam money off of desperate people looking for tests.
Well, the tests that are out there, the ones that are actually legitimate, have gotten emergency use authorizations from the FDA. So you should see that marking somewhere on the package. You can actually look on the FDA's website and see if the test kit you bought actually corresponds to one that has an emergency use authorization. And if you're in any doubt, I would say to call your doctor, call your local hospital, and see if that kit is something that's legitimate. But the FDA does have a listing of what actually has been cleared by them.
Okay, well, I'm just actually looking at, like you just said, I'm looking at this little kit that I have, and on the bottom left-hand corner, you probably can't see it on camera because it's so small, but it does say FDA Emergency Use Authorization. Here, I'll hold it really close to the camera, as close as I can reach, and it's got the little check mark there, so that's a good thing to look for. Hopefully, scam artists aren't going to reproduce that, though, because they're pretty good at getting ahead of the game. Okay, Dr. Ramon, really quickly, I wanted to just go over a couple of the other countries because I'm always fascinated to see how they're doing and if it's a global problem or if it's an America problem. And, well, I'm going to let you assess this one. So these are countries with similar and even larger populations than we have. And in the last 2 days, the new cases in the U.S. Were 264,000, and that corresponded to 293 deaths. In India, the number is 27,000. Dear heavens. That's a tenth. And the deaths are roughly the same. It's interesting. In Brazil, 4,000. That's it. 30 deaths. And Switzerland, clearly a different size, but 15,000 cases in the last 2 days and only 6 deaths. Are we just botching this? Like, how can these numbers not correspond appropriately? Are we just botching testing, or are we botching politics, or all of the above?
Well, Ashley, I think that this is actually not a comparison that you can make directly at this point. This variant is spreading rapidly here in the United States right now. We saw it go through South Africa. We're watching it go through Europe. And we are where we are right now. Those other countries may not be at the same stage of this epidemic, of these local epidemics, than we are. So I think it's very difficult to be able to make those comparisons. Another thing that we have to remember is that every country is going to be different in terms of its demographics and its risk. So we've had different countries, South Africa, I'm just to take South Africa as a perfect example, because we've been using South Africa as an example and saying, well, we're going to see what happened in South Africa and we're going to see the same thing here. South Africa has a very different socioeconomic background. We also have very different age demographics. So here in the United States, we have a much higher median age. South that here it's around 39. In South Africa, it's in the 20s. We have a different demographic in terms of the kind of comorbidities that we have, the different kind of age structure. So I think we have to be very careful when we're making connections from one country to another country and say it's going to be the same thing here. You know, we can talk about what we've done here, what we need to do here. We need to get in front of it. We need to get more vaccines, more boosters in arms. We need to do better with testing. All of that is true, but we can't really compare what's happened in other countries where they've also had different strains of the virus circulating or variants circulating and make that direct comparison here.
So in my tiny microcosm of my little world, one of our producers just got home from Switzerland, and when it came time to get her test to get on the airplane, she walked into the post office. 5 minutes later, walked out with a result back on the plane. Everything was great. And then she gets to America and Customs and Immigration doesn't even ask her for it. So gah, it drives me a little bit batty. I want to thank both of you, and I hope you'll both come back, because I think there's just more questions than answers, especially with all the protocols. Once you get your results and then you're dealing with this, you know, school system that's different than everyone else's school system. So a national newscast won't even help you with that. But thank you both, and Happy New Year, and I wish you both safety.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Okay, coming up, the last best hope of the wrongly convicted and also the truly guilty. is that you can't fight the facts and you can't beat the law. So then you just go ahead and blame your lawyer. Drew Peterson is thinking that exact philosophy. Is it going to work for this guy? You might be surprised as to why the answer is yes. Welcome back. 2022 could be Drew Peterson's year, which is saying a lot, because the former Chicago area cop is due to spend this year and next year and then 67 more years after that, the same way that he spent the last 9 years in that kind of a jumpsuit, locked up in prison for killing his third wife, Kathleen Savio, and then also doing some extra bonus time for trying to hire a contract killer to take out the prosecutor who put him behind bars in the first place. That's something. But while some convicted killers would exhaust their appeals and then eventually just accept their fate, that is not the Peterson way. Using nothing but a pen and paper and his own initiative, Peterson has finagled himself back into an Illinois courthouse, where later this month, if everything goes right and nothing goes wrong, he could get a whole new trial. Before I tell you how, and of course, how Peterson pulled off that whisper-thin chance at freedom, let's take a little trip back in time to 2007, because that's important. That's the year that Peterson's fourth wife, Stacy, vanished. She was 23 at the time, and Peterson was 52, and she looked very happy. And I don't think she was so happy. She's never been found. And Peterson has never been charged in whatever the hell it was that caused her to disappear. He has always insisted that she just gone, ran off. But had that fourth wife not, I don't know, run off or had something really, really bad happen to her, authorities might never have taken a second look at the death of Peterson's third wife. Her name was Kathleen. And she was found dead in her bathtub in 2004 during what was shaping up to be a pretty ugly divorce. At the time, her death was called an accident. But when Stacy, that's wife number four I'm talking about, when she just vanished, Kathleen, wife number three, well, they just up and exhumed her remains. And then they went and reclassified her death as a homicide. Peterson was charged. Peterson was convicted, and Peterson was sentenced to 38 years in prison. And before the judge could even bring the gavel down on that sentence, Peterson and his new lawyers were blaming the old lawyer for botching his defense. And the judge has now agreed to schedule a hearing and look over that 2.5 weeks from now. To be sure, Peterson was no fan of the prosecutor in his murder trial either. So he hired a fellow prisoner to have that prosecutor murdered. It didn't work. And in 2016, Peterson was convicted and had another 40 years of an additional sentence tagged on to his punishment for that little scheme. Okay, to be fair, Peterson's attorney in the Kathleen Savio, wife number three, in that trial, his name's Joel Brodsky, he was no Matlock. He may well have sunk his own client when he called a divorce lawyer to the stand, and not just any divorce lawyer, it was the divorce lawyer for Drew's murdered wife. And that lawyer testified under oath that the next wife, Stacy, she's wife number four, had actually confided in him that Drew killed wife number three. Poof, it's a lot to follow, I know. So here's the problem. Stacy couldn't testify about this herself and be cross-examined about it because, as I explained, she mysteriously disappeared. Drew Peterson also has this beef. He says he wanted to testify in his own defense, but his lawyer wouldn't let him. It's always your choice. Always. It's not the lawyer's choice. Who better than a lawyer, and not just any lawyer, a law professor from Cornell, to explain all of this and actually to give me some odds on Drew Peterson's chance at a brand new trial and maybe even the light of day. That guy, Randy Zellin, is coming up next. An ex-cop who was convicted of murdering his third wife only after his fourth wife disappeared has gotten himself one last chance at a brand new trial. And his name is Drew Peterson. And my guest is New York's super lawyer and Cornell Law School professor, Randy Zellin. Randy, great to see you. You're the perfect person to ask this because I know you have followed this case since the beginning. I think I've been talking about this case with you since the beginning. I feel like this is one of those like crazy Hail Marys. But then again, a crazy Hail Mary wouldn't get that hearing, wouldn't get two investigators, wouldn't get a brand new lawyer, all at the taxpayer's expense. So why is this happening?
Well, remember, ask Doug Flutie. Hail Marys happen. The point is that we should not sell so short the possibility that the things that Mr. Peterson is alleging may be in part or in whole true. I have been in courtrooms where it was very clear to me that the defendant did not want to plead guilty and was basically being pushed into it by an attorney. Conversely, I have sat around in a courtroom and watched the hearing where it was pretty obvious. The client went to trial, the defendant went to trial, and never knew about a plea offer. Strange things happen. And what Mr. Peterson is alleging, and the relevant and important things that he's alleging are, okay, I wanted to testify, and my lawyer wouldn't let me. The other team of lawyers who were involved were basically threatened and told to keep their mouths shut. My lawyer told me to go into the media and hold press conferences. If I didn't do anything wrong, I have nothing to hide. We have very strange testimony coming out where apparently there was someone acting in the role of a priest and acting in the role of an attorney who testified about what could be confidential communications, which ended up perhaps leading to Mr. Peterson's guilt. If any one of those things are true, then certainly it's genuine. He was deprived of a fair trial and he was deprived of competent counsel.
Okay, so two things. You blew my mind with the Doug Flutie reference. I don't think you know this, but he played drums in my band in Canada when he was a Calgary Stampeder. So A plus to you for bringing up Doug Flutie. Second, the issue of the former attorney, I think, what's his name? Joel Brodsky. He calls to the stand the ex-wife of his, the divorce lawyer of his ex-wife, the murdered wife. And he gets up on the stand and he says the next wife actually confided in him that the former wife had been murdered. That does sound to me like very bad counsel. But last I checked, you are entitled to a fair trial, not a perfect trial.
That's correct. But you are entitled to a fair trial. And what a fair trial means is a trial where you were defended by a competent attorney who meets the minimum standards of giving you an adequate defense. And I would respectfully submit that a defense attorney who puts a witness on the stand to inculpate his client, unless that was so brilliant that nobody understands it and somebody must be thinking, wow, if you actually did that, you must have something going on here that I'm just not catching. But for the rest of us, that seriously calls into question whether or not Mr. Peterson was given adequate representation. Who would do that?
Yep. Okay, I only have like about a minute and a half left, but I think this is important. So many people usually say about a defendant, well, he did something bad, you know, years and years ago. Why can't that make it into the trial? Because it doesn't speak to the crime that's being tried. Okay.
However, do not convict people by a propensity. Just because I did it 3 years ago doesn't mean I did it today.
So by that same logic, this lawyer that he's claiming ineffective assistance of counsel basically stinks, and that's why I'm in prison. This lawyer had his law license suspended for 2 years over like a couple of different cases. And he talked about him having aggressive tactics and relentless vindictiveness, again, related to other cases. Can that make it into this case?
Yes, because we're not talking about issues of guilt or innocence. We're not talking about a criminal trial. Certainly, character, habit, and that proof that if this lawyer did it before makes it more likely than not that he did it again. And also, even in a criminal trial, if you can show, for example, a common plan or scheme or a lack of mistake, that's where the past can come in. But what's most interesting here is, and I'll blow your mind again, the defense attorney's best friend is going to be the prosecutor. The prosecutor will vouch for the defense attorney. He did a great job, great job, great job. Why? Because the prosecutor doesn't want to try this case again.
I love the way everything gets very twisty when there's an ineffective assistance of counsel. By the way, this is why you teach at Cornell, because you're very good at it, and even I can understand it. So if even I can understand it, your students are, they're you know, destined
for greatness.
The two of
us, you are the smarter one in these two boxes right now. Stop.
I learned the law on a Kellogg's box, truthfully. Hey, Randy, Happy New Year. You'll come back again, I hope.
Hope so. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Okay. Happy New Year. Randy Zellin, amazing. He always has the answers. Okay. When we come back, was it a tantrum or was it something far more serious and deserving of our compassion? I know you saw it, the Antonio Brown meltdown. So what are you witnessing? What are you really witnessing when you watch him run off the field mid-game half naked? I'm talking about that in a moment. Okay, even if you're not a fan of football, you have likely heard the name Antonio Brown, and you've likely seen the video of his tantrum as he stormed off the field last night in Jersey, half naked, mid-game. The announcers were quick to pass judgment on the wide receiver, calling him a spoiled quitter as such. After all, Antonio's got a long history of, shall we say, histrionics, on and off the field. But other people have come to his defense, including his former teammate and quarterback, Tom Brady. Brady called for compassion, suggesting that Brown may be in the midst of a mental health crisis and may be in need of help. I am joined now by Dr. Matthew Sacco, a health and sports performance psychologist at the Cleveland Clinic. Thank you so much for being with me. I was so interested in watching this and then the fallout. Terry Bradshaw said the following: they need to put him in a straitjacket and take him to some hospital. Lots of people laughed. People were angry. But then came the other movement, and that is that we may be seeing a mental health issue. And this isn't weird. I mean, Simone Biles had a mental health issue that she was very open about. We also saw Naomi Osaka had a mental health issue. Are people in sports starting to get it, that maybe it's not just bad behavior, maybe it is something more?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that as these events, as we see them start to happen more often in the public eye, I think we're all starting to get a greater understanding that perhaps some of the pressure, some of the being in the public eye like that is certainly, making some of the stuff more common, and people starting to look more closely at it because it's hard. A lot of it doesn't make sense. And so when it doesn't make sense, we start to look for ways to make these explanations work for us. And I think that's the case.
Well, listen, lots of football players have behaved very badly, so it's easy to jump, you know, to a conclusion. But I will tell you this. Once I saw Tom Brady's postgame, I had a very different sort of epiphany. Let me just play a little bit of that moment. Take a look.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a difficult situation. And, I think we all want, him to just, I think everybody should find, hopefully do what they can to help him in ways that. You know, he really needs it. I think everyone should be very compassionate and empathetic toward, some very difficult things that are happening.
So, Dr. Sacco, I thought what was interesting is the story emerged that the coaches had told him to re-enter the game. He refused, said that he had an ankle injury. But then this, I mean, if you look at that video, that doesn't look like someone who's having an issue with his ankle. He's, running and jumping and seems quite jubilant. So there may be very much something to what Tom Brady had said.
Yeah, I think that it's hard to come to any other conclusion than that there is something else going on here other than what we may think more purely as this kind of like tantrum behavior, because most people, people don't act this way without other things going on. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So, and then to hear from the people that are with him more regularly, like someone like Tom Brady, clearly kind of reading between the lines with what he's saying. Obviously, there's more going on here. And from my standpoint, I think that there's nothing wrong at that point in terms of asking for some compassion and, you know, kind of hopefully, you know, somebody offering the help and trying to help him get what he needs out of this, because it's clearly something's going on.
So let me ask you one quick question. A lot of people look at a 2016 game that he was hit, helmet-to-helmet hit with a player named Vontaze Burfict. And a Pittsburgh radio host said this after that hit. He started to be someone who was afraid. Everyone was out to get him. He never smiled after that all that much. He became somebody different. He used to be innocently narcissistic, much like a lot of receivers in the NFL, but he didn't have this dark side to him. And for me, every single incident, it all happened after the Burfict hit. I just want to get sort of 30 seconds from you on what you think about that.
I think that when we look in hindsight for explanations for kind of these behaviors, and maybe as the case that was described there, the reason why some of this stuff that seemed so innocent before now, you know, describes have that dark side. I think hindsight just gives us that bias where you kind of say, well, that must be it. There's also kind of a natural progression where we look at this, his early years and some of the behaviors. And over time, he became more well-known, more famous, kind of more in the spotlight. And I think the turning up of the intensity is equally as likely to explain some of those behaviors getting worse as would be saying some, I mean, not to suggest that a hit to the head isn't a big deal, but to point to that being what turned it.
Right.
I think that there are a lot of factors that are probably coming into play there.
Dr. Sacco, thanks. I do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right, so the other thing is that some people say that CTE is a big deal here, that's possible. And, that's something that's made people look long and hard about football, mostly due to research done on brains on the NFL players who've died. So question for you, what percentage of these brains do you think showed signs of CTE? There are the answers there, and we'll have the right one after this. 99% of the brains obtained from NFL players who died had signs of CTE, so important to consider the behavior of players before they die. We'll see you tomorrow.